If you spent any time around people who like to watch birds, you know some of them are really passionate about their pastime. And it's a pretty widely held pastime. Witness all the people who flock, pardon the expression, to the Klamath Basin in the dead of winter for the Winter Wings Festival, largely a bald eagle event. There is another bird festival on the way, this one planned for the Rogue Valley next weekend. The Klamath Bird Observatory is putting the final touches on plans for the first ever Mountain Bird Festival. We have two guests from the Klamath Bird Observatory here in the studio. John Alexander is the Executive Director. John, thanks for coming.
Thanks for having us.
And we also have Brandon Breen, who is the Science Communications and Outreach Director at the Klamath Bird Observatory. Welcome, Brandon.
Thank you.
John, give us the history lesson on the Klamath Bird Observatory, what it's about and how long it's been in existence.
There's an organization called Partners in Flight, and Partners in Flight is in about its 25th year. And Partners in Flight was developed to create a proactive international bird conservation coalition to address concerns about continental declines in migratory birds and resident birds that were happening and that had been documented through long-time monitoring programs throughout the country. And when that program started in the early 1990s, federal agencies and nonprofit organizations started working to develop a monitoring program in the Klamath Siskiyou bioregion, the state of Jefferson, covering areas from Redding to Roseburg, from the coast out to the east side of the basin. And in that work, we developed one of the most comprehensive bird monitoring and research networks in the country. And from that emerged the Klamath Bird Observatory. And so the Klamath Bird Observatory, we incorporated in 2000 after, you know, working on this research and monitoring program for about a decade with a mission to advance bird and habitat conservation through science, education, and partnerships. We're using birds as indicators of the health of our ecosystems and trying to use science to guide natural resource management towards a more sustainable approach to create more resilient lands, airs, and waters throughout our region. We've grown from that program to be working throughout the Pacific Northwest and then following the birds throughout their migratory patterns. Most of our birds that are migratory in the forests of the Pacific Northwest range towards Mexico and North Central America. And so programs provide research and then provide community education opportunities to demonstrate birds as indicators of our well-being, not only the well-being of our natural resources, but the economic well-being and our community well-being that are hinged on the ability for us to maintain the natural resources that both birds and people depend on.
So far beyond birds, really just about all of us in the ecosystem, with the birds as the representative of the ecosystem.
Absolutely.
So what are some of the pressures? I mean, particularly in this region, I want to get to climate change in a moment. Pre-climate change, what are some of the pressures on birds in our region? Aside from the spotted owl, I think that one's pretty well covered.
Yeah, so the pressures on birds and our natural resources, the ability to balance the use of natural resources for today and recognize that we also need to maintain productive natural resources into the future for generations to come. So some of the challenges are, how do we extract natural resources while maintaining the ability of our forests to be resilient and to provide natural resources into the future? A large challenge that we have both in upland forests and then along our rivers and streams is understanding natural cycles that maintain resilience in our ecosystems. So cycles of fire and disturbance, or cycles of flooding and disturbance. And so how can we work with our natural resources in a way that we replicate the natural disturbance regimes in the way we disturb things? And then, of course, setting aside important areas to function independently of natural resource extraction is a big part of that. So we continue to learn how do natural systems function, and then how can we work in some of our multiple use landscapes to make sure we're maintaining natural systems.
Brandon Breen, prior to the upcoming Mountain Bird Festival, what are the ways in which the general public interfaces with the Klamath Bird Observatory?
Well, there are a number of different ways. Klamath Bird Observatory has been involved in starting with community education. We have presence. We have a presence at a number of different festivals throughout the state of Jefferson. That's a good way for us to interact with people on the ground and tell our story. And then additionally, KBO board members and staff will give presentations throughout the region on a range of content related to birds and kind of, you know, sharing the importance of birds and what they can tell us about environmental health, as well as, you know, just some of the inspiring aspects of birds.
How does the work then of KBO dovetail with, for example, the Audubon Society, with Nature Conservancy, other groups that are interested in some of the same things that you're interested in, and perhaps more broadly focus?
So we take a very broad approach to partnerships. We partner with as many different kinds of organizations as we can. So the Rogue Valley Audubon Society, as an example, is one of the sponsors of this bird festival. We've done lots of collaborative projects with them, from citizen science projects. They helped us to develop local eBird portals, which are ways that local birders can contribute to the science of conservation. They've helped with our education programs. We work with the Nature Conservancy on various projects, including providing science to the Ashland Watershed Resiliency Program, doing private lands restoration work with a local group called Lomakatse Restoration Project, working with the agencies to try to help improve adaptive management of our natural resources on public lands. You had mentioned a couple other groups. So we really reach out. Partnerships is the key to our success, in that we are proactive. We take a non-advocacy approach to bringing pure science to the table to help people make better decisions.
Non-advocacy. In other words, you're trying to just present the information and say, okay, here's what you do with it.
Yeah. There's certain organizations' jobs are to make decisions, and our job is to help people make the most informed decisions possible and to provide assessments to understand if we were to think of conservation priorities, think of ecosystems or birds that are most at risk versus ones that are least at risk. We try to use that as the context for the information that we present.
John Alexander is the executive director of the Klamath Bird Observatory. Brandon Breen is the science communications and outreach director. We're talking about the Klamath Bird Observatory generally and the upcoming Mountain Bird Festival next weekend. You got questions and comments about birds and the ecosystem or the festival itself? Give us a call, 800-838-3760, anywhere you can hear us. Our Rogue Valley local number, 541-552-6782. By email, jx@jeffnet.org. So, Brandon, judging by what I just saw in the newspaper, it looks like you're the busy guy getting ready for this Mountain Bird Festival.
That's definitely fair. Yeah. Uh-huh.
So how did the idea come together for the Mountain Bird Festival? What did you envision doing through a Mountain Bird Festival?
You know, the initial story of the festival goes back a few years at least, and it's kind of a fun story. So one of our board members, who's our board president now, Harry Fuller, he and one of his friends, I believe, came up with this idea to host a bird festival here in Ashland. And just to give a little background on Harry, Harry is one of these passionate birders that you had mentioned at the beginning of the program.
Have been in the studio at least three times.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Yep. So he's well known here. But anyways, he, you know, is incredibly passionate and loves sharing birds with people. And he's lived in this area for a while now, and And he's also traveled to a number of birding festivals throughout the country.
And his most recent book, the reason we had him on was he's written a book about amateur birding from Seattle to San Francisco, basically just a few miles of Interstate 5, within a few miles of Interstate 5. So interesting book, interesting discussion, but that's Harry Fuller.
Yes, exactly. So basically, you know, having lived here, he just looking around at what the town of Ashland and what the Rogue Valley has to offer and considering the mountain bird specialties of this region, he just thought, you know, gosh, this is an incredible place for a birding festival. And, you know, there's a number of bird species that occur in this area, such as white-headed woodpecker and green-tailed towhee, among many others, that are kind of mountain birds, and you're not going to see them so much if you're nearer to the coast in Portland or San Francisco. So there's a big draw for audiences from those places.
So who are the people that you expect to come to the Mountain Bird Festival? I mean, are they just birders? Can they be general public? I mean, is this a good place for a novice to just get started, you know, grab the binoculars and join all these other people for the first time?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, the Birding Festival really offers a lot. So some of the things that are offered at the festival, one, there's 2 days of field trips. And the majority of those are birding field trips, so that's going to appeal to birders primarily. However, the trips will be accessible for people who are just kind of getting into birding. So those are kind of open to anyone. And then we have some evening entertainment on Friday, May 30th, and Saturday, May 31st. And that evening entertainment really has a wide appeal. It includes some really exciting keynote presentations, one by Pepper Trail, who's a local author and scientist, and the second keynote is by Barry Kraft, who amazes me in the fact that he has acted in all 38 of Shakespeare's plays.
He has, yes. And wrote a book and joined us in the studio, too. Yeah, a former dramaturg, or still a dramaturg.
Still a dramaturg, yep.
At the Shakespeare Festival. All right. And so what's Barry Kraft's connection to birding, though?
Oh, he's just a longtime birder. He's really excited about it, and he... not to give away too much about the keynote, but, well, his keynote is going to talk about kind of the... The title of it is Shakespeare and the Corvids. So corvids is the family name for the jays and the crows and the ravens and those types of birds. But he has some pretty interesting experiences with ravens, and some of that will be shared through his keynote.
I sense a Poe poem in here somewhere, but again, we don't want to give it away. We're talking about the Mountain Bird Festival with John Alexander and Brandon Breen from the Klamath Bird Observatory. Again, you can join us at 800-838-3760 or 541-552-6782 or by email jx@jeffnet.org. To pull back from the festival and to get a little more general again about birds in the region, I know from having previous discussions with Harry Fuller on the program about the fact that species that generally were considered to be ranging further south of here, and not just on the West Coast, but all over the country, birds that generally were considered more subtropical are starting to show up in places like Kentucky, for example. Just ran a piece this morning on one of our news segments about the fact that brown pelicans are now seen nesting in the Columbia River, and this is a Southern California and Mexican bird. So, I mean, when we talk about the pressures on birds in the region, John Alexander, climate change is a big part of this, I'm guessing?
Climate change is a significant factor. We did have a conference that we hosted here in Ashland several years ago to ask about climate change and how the previous decades of bird conservation planning either change or don't change as a result of our increased knowledge of the effects of climate change. And what we determined is that climate change is a significant factor. It's a significant factor that makes that much more important most of what we've already been saying about bird conservation needs, in that there's an additional pressure that's leveraging the kinds of threats that face the health of our ecosystems. And so it adds a little bit more tension to the system when we think about what our conservation needs are. But in general, the conservation needs remain the same. They're just that much more relevant and important to be addressed. The other interesting thing that our research has done, and people can actually go to a decision support system that we've developed. It's called Avian Knowledge Northwest, and it can be linked right off of our website. And you can look at the distribution of birds currently and then look at the potential distribution of birds based on different climate change scenarios and see how we're predicting that bird distributions are moving. And so the general thought is that birds are moving north and birds are moving uphill. But it's a little more complicated than that. And one of the things that we did with some research in California is showed that bird communities are actually likely to shuffle as climate change continues to happen. So some birds might move, you know, it's not just a steady march of all of the bird communities to the north and uphill, but instead it's a bit of a more, birds are responding to different aspects of climate, and different aspects of climate
are shifting across landscapes based on our understanding of the change. And so it's as you would imagine a scientist would say, it's quite a complicated situation. But we're starting to get a handle on that and really be able to understand. So if communities are shifting, where can we identify core areas of refugia and core areas to maintain resilience? And then also, how can we do climate smart management? So when we're trying to present bird conservation science results, we're presenting them in a context of climate change, in that if we're going to do oak woodland restoration, where's our oak woodland restoration going to be most likely successful based on our predictions of the future? And so climate change is a significant factor, and it provides some direction for where we take the science. But the bird conservation messages remain the same, just that much more urgent.
With the interrelationships, then, you could really end up with some tricky situations to deal with. I don't want to use the domino effect sort of methodology or terminology here. But if, for example, you have a bird move into a region and it eats certain kinds of seeds, and all of a sudden it's stripping the trees bare of those seeds, suddenly the trees have trouble propagating, et cetera, you have ripple effects throughout an entire ecosystem. So you're really talking about more than just like, oh, look, it's, you know, this bird we don't usually see around here showing up.
Certainly. And we think about the phenology of plants, the phenology being the timing in which flowers bloom. And then we think of the phenology of bird migration and how those have evolved to be synchronous. And so as these things start to change, you know, there's a lot of unknowns with, you know, another term could be cascading effects of these different changes and shifts in timing and distributions of plants and animals that depend on each other.
How tricky a process is it to be able to provide scientific information and not do advocacy? You said you're not involved in advocacy, but I mean, there must be situations where you're going, look what's happening here. I mean, this is serious, without saying you need to do this. But in some cases, you're directing what the options could be, right?
Yeah. What helps us is that we are scaled and we're very robust in the science that we've done. So we've worked through Partners in Flight continentally to assess the conservation needs across the continent. And so we know which ecosystems and which habitats are most in need and which birds are most in need within those ecosystems. So then we can use our more regional science to understand the potential effects, let's say, of management alternatives. And we can present them in the context of what the broader scientific community has identified as priorities. And so, again, we present it that way, and the decision makers either need to meet those priorities by mandate or want to meet those priorities because it's part of the multiple use mandates on those landscapes. Our biggest challenge, what I find after doing this for 20 years, is science not used. We have a very robust amount of science that can inform management practices. One of our approaches is, how can we improve the process of doing management, measuring whether we achieved what we wanted to achieve on the landscape, and then adapting that management to make sure we really are achieving. Let's say there's a lot of discussion right now about accelerated forest restoration. We've got the science. We've published it. Now it's a matter of presenting it in ways that people use it. And so our biggest push right now is to make sure that the science gets into the hands of the right people, presented in the right way, so it's used. So we don't want science unused. We have the best available science. We have a very robust data set and robust decision support tools for helping make better decisions and doing better in adapting the way and measuring and holding ourselves accountable for what we say we're going to do across our landscapes.
So at next weekend's Mountain Bird Festival, I'm going to take a wild guess, Brandon Breen, that you've got pretty well-trained people leading your field trip. So it's more than, gee, pretty bird, but, you know, pretty bird in this context, and this is why it's here and this is what it needs.
Yes, absolutely. So we, you know, one of the things that's been really fun about being one of the organizers for this Mountain Bird Festival is working with the community volunteers. So we have really overwhelming support from, you know, just a host of volunteers who are helping out, you know, with the setup of the festival and the organizing of the festival. And then, as you're asking about, with leading the actual field trips. So we have Saturday and Sunday field trips. Each of these days, we have approximately 14 field trips being offered, and all of these are being led by, you know, community bird experts, who volunteers. And I've birded with probably half of them, and really an excellent group, just wonderful people, incredibly knowledgeable. And, yeah, they will certainly provide, you know, a rich perspective into the ecology and the birds that people are watching.
It sounds like with a lot of festivals that have some fairly structured presentations that you can't see them all. I mean, you have to pick one field trip over the other.
Yeah, that's true. So, but, you know, that said, there is some ability in this festival to have your cake and eat it too, because a number of the field trips are offered both Saturday and Sunday.
Ah, okay.
So, right. So of these, maybe 16 or 18 total field trips, because some of them aren't offered both days. You know, if there's a couple of them that really appeal to you, then you may be able to go on, you know, your top two choices on different days.
So it is the first time you're doing the Mountain Bird Festival at the Klamath Bird Observatory. What's your target for the number of people you'd like to show up? And do people buy one ticket for the whole weekend, or can they buy like a ticket to just this field trip, et cetera?
So right now we have about 115 people signed up. So we're very delighted with that. We've got a week away now from the festival, so we're hoping that number will go up just a little bit more. And the way the registration works is there's two options. One is the full festival pass, and that costs $100. And with that, you get one Saturday field trip, one Sunday field trip. You get a very attractive, I think, mountain bird tote bag. Plus, you get two significant conservation stamps that directly support conservation. John, would you want to describe those stamps? And then I'll come back and just...
We've got very limited time, so we need to wrap up.
Oh, okay.
So $100 for the whole weekend or...
Yep. And then the other option is to come to the Friday and Saturday evening festivities, or just the Saturday one. And that those include the keynotes, music, local food, and a fine art auction featuring some just wonderful art from local artists.
And what's the base of operations for the Mountain Bird Festival?
It's ScienceWorks Hands-On Museum.
Okay, we had Chip Lindsay in here yesterday. We're having a lot of crossover with our guests this week, it seems. Okay, the Mountain Bird Festival next weekend. John Alexander and Brandon Breen from the Klamath Bird Observatory. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That'll do it for this hour. More coming up.